You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. We're also heard on FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7, as well as on the World Wide Web. And either Samantha or Paul, who wants to take that? Paul.
All right.
That would be 1510wwbc.com. You can listen in online. Or download the app as well, WWBC.
You just hit that little button that says On Demand and hit Live.
Well, that's if you're listening in on the website. That's correct. You just hit the button there that says Listen In Live.
I tell you, Sam, this is really interesting. I'm so glad that I added you onto the lineup for Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, because our dear friend, Ellen, was on her way here, and she had an emergency phone call, and she had to turn around, so... Thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of Viewpoints with Sita and Friends.
It's one of the best journeys I've been on so far. I love it.
So on Mondays, Ellen, myself, and Sam, we sit here with Paul, who's a producer and gives us an opportunity to have a voice on radio and then a podcast. And we speak about things that are going on around the nation and right here in Brevard County, Florida, and all over the world, actually.
Yes, we do.
And we seem to be having a lot of guests who speak on our show about social issues, things like advocacy for the homeless, affordable housing, healthcare. We talk about reproductive rights. We speak about things that affect everyone, whether they know it or not. And so today is no different. I found two wonderful guests for today, and the first one is going to be Dr. Sunny Munn, and she's an MD. She's not practicing as a physician right now, but she is working with a group where she does a lot of quality reviews. She's a VP of client services at a healthcare startup, an IT company, that builds real-time consumer and patient feedback software. She's very smart.
Nice.
And she's got quite an extensive bio. She worked at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. She worked in Queens Hospital as a per diem hospitalist. She also worked with hospice. She's also a professor chief medical services. So much to talk about, but we have limited time because we also have another guest who's calling in the second segment. His name is Alex Barrio, and you've read about that. He is calling in from the Center for American Progress. We'll be speaking with him about gun violence. And then we have Kay Mirage, our own Kay Mirage, is here in studio to talk about Carnival in Palm Bay.
That's right.
Thank you, Kay, for being here.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
I mean, such limited time for such awesome subjects.
That's okay. So, you always find a way to make it happen.
We will make it happen. And Paul, thank you for giving us an opportunity again to keep Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on air for almost 11 years, and thanks to our sponsors. So without any further ado, I'm going to say good morning. Actually, good afternoon.
Good noon, Sunny.
Good afternoon, Sunny Munn. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
You, girl, you sound like you sound so young. And then I look at your bio and I'm like, she can't be that young, but you look young and you sound young.
That's that New Yorker spunk is just always there, ready to go.
Yeah. I turned 52 this year, and you know, I grew up in the South. I grew up in New Orleans, so it's actually that Southern, I think it's the Southern in me that makes my voice sound young and friendly.
You know what? The picture you posted on Facebook where you were going back into the office, you don't look like no 52-year-old. I swear to God, you look like you're like 23.
Oh, my God. I should call into your show more regularly.
Yes. But, you know, I was walking at the gym this morning with my mask on, and I was CNN was on, and they were saying that several states no longer ordering the full vaccine doses, and because the demand had dropped. And I thought, oh my gosh, I said, this is going to be something that we're going to be talking about today on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And so I'm so glad that I chose you to call in today, because I want to ask you first to begin with, how are you and how are things? Because you've been doing a lot with volunteering, with helping out with COVID-19.
I'm at a place where I think a lot of people are. I'm exhausted, and as you probably know, as you mentioned, I live in New York City, which was sort of the epicenter of the crisis, at least in the United States. And New York City is slowly coming back to life, and so I feel hope in a way that I didn't feel before. I mean, I always knew that we would come out of this, but I feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But of course, I'm distressed. There's lots of people are in that, you know, some people are still not feeling comfortable about getting the vaccine, which is really our best hope of returning to some normalcy, or, you know, whatever the new normalcy will be.
So you're a physician, and I'm married to a physician, and most of our friends are physicians or nurses or in healthcare, and my husband gets a little bit, I wouldn't say disgusted, but dismayed when we hear people talk about the COVID-19. I mean, people who don't own a library card, never went into a library to pick up a book, some didn't even graduate high school, and they want to talk about who should be taking the shot, who shouldn't be taking the shot, and why. And there's so much misinformation out there about the COVID-19 vaccine. How can you help our listeners to learn a little bit more and set aside some of those fears, misinformation and conspiracy theories and fears?
So a couple of things. So just in terms of my background, as you mentioned, I used to be a palliative care physician, and I used to be a medical director of a hospice, and I used to actually teach physicians on communication skills. And I think that whether the topic is about end-of-life care or coronavirus misconceptions about the vaccine, there's some basic communication skills that we can all use to try to help our fellow citizens to do the right thing. And so a couple of things. So the first thing is, you know, the setting of where the conversation is happening is important. I think that these days, so many conversations are happening in settings that are not conducive to a productive conversation, and that includes social media. Social media not only is a source of misinformation, but just the way that we interact with each other, it's about like one upping the other. You can't read tone. Obviously, if somebody that you're interacting with is in another state and somebody that you don't know, it's not like you can call them. But if we're interacting with somebody that we have a relationship with, I think it's so much more helpful if you can pick up the phone or text or just anything that's a little bit more personable if we have a relationship with that person, because a back and forth on social media is very, very hard. But regardless of the setting, I think that speaking as somebody who, you know, I trained in Western medicine, I'm definitely somebody who's very science and fact-based. And I realized that. And we talked about the frustration when people who maybe didn't go to medical school like me said something like, oh, I don't want my DNA messed up by the vaccine. So the first thing to remember is that most people, no matter what they say, no matter what kind of misinformation that they're spouting, for the most part, are saying these things because they think that they're doing the right thing for their health, you know, hopefully in the health of their loved ones. It's just they're misinformed. So I try to make sure that I give them the benefit of the doubt that they're not trying to harm anybody, because that lowers my frustration. And a lot of times, whenever, you know, especially with physicians, we go into a room and we talk to a patient, or even non-physicians, when we talk to our friends about something like whether they should get a vaccine, we have a tendency to go in and just start talking at people. I mean, especially if we have a lot of knowledge. And sometimes when you start off a conversation by talking at people, it automatically shuts them off to you, because you may be addressing something that's not even something that they're thinking about. And so it might be helpful if you suspect that somebody may not be so open to getting the vaccine, for saying, tell me more about what your thoughts are about the vaccine. What are your concerns?
Right. So more like listen. So in order to get your point across, become a good listener.
Exactly.
Yes.
And then when they say something like whatever concerns that they express, I think it's very helpful to validate the concerns. And it no matter what they say, to say, I hear, and if it's something you disagree with, you don't have to agree with the crazy thing that they say, but you can say something affirming, such as, I hear what you're saying about that concern. And then talk to them in a way that hopefully addresses their concern.
And sometimes you have to reach them at their level, too, because I was speaking with someone, a friend of mine from Haiti, actually somebody I work with, and the girl was adamant about bush tea. I mean, I could literally see her brewing the tea in front of me. She was that visual. And she's like, no, I have this tea and I'm going to take it and it helps me. It's going to help my me to not get the virus and I won't get sick. And, you know, and then finally I gave up and I said, you know what? If that makes you feel good to drink your tea, I'm so happy for you. I said, but if you need further information, I can really direct you to someone that I know who knows a lot more about COVID-19 and the infection rate and the vaccines and wearing your mask and preventing infections. And I said, I could give you that article. And she said, no, nurse, I know pretty much everything I need to know. So sometimes you just have to agree to disagree and leave it alone.
Right. So sometimes that definitely happens, but that's rare. Most people can be, are more open, but you're right. There are some people who at this point don't want to hear any information. But you know what you did? You didn't close the door to her. So if she hears something later, she's going to come back to you. Whereas if you had said, I think you're stupid and I can't believe you're doing this, she's never going to change her mind. But because you said to her, I hear your concerns, I don't necessarily agree that this is how I would approach it, but I'm here for you if you change your mind. And that's what's important. And also to understand that most people are willing to listen. And we also know from focus groups that there are certain ways of phrasing things that is more helpful. So, for example, we know that in certain groups, for example, unfortunately, political party is a big factor. Like younger male Republicans especially are less likely to get vaccinated. And if you say to them, you should get vaccinated because it's the right thing to do, you'll turn them off. We know that talking about the vaccine in terms of this is the best way to help your family and you stay healthy and a return to normalcy and will help the economy return. Those are the things that we know will help them. So just like you said, Sita, you're absolutely right. We have to be mindful of who we're talking to and first hear from them what the concerns are and addressing them, and don't make assumptions about, you know, what's important to me is important to them. So for me, I got the vaccine because it was the right thing to do. Like, for me, it's a moral issue, to be honest with you. But for lots of people, especially people in some demographic groups, presenting it as a moral thing will turn them off to getting the vaccine because they'll think that you're preaching to them or something.
Right, yeah. And sometimes I'll just post that, you know, what Dr. Fauci said, I don't know what to do to get more people to care about each other. And that sometimes makes people think. But I also noticed that a lot more people are thinking about the long-term effects of COVID-19. So if you say to them, well, you know, if you get the virus, this is what can happen. And then they say, well, wait a minute, I have a relative with something. And, so you can reach them in that way, too, maybe not just with themselves. And I also said to this person, I said, well, you work in healthcare. You're taking care of the most vulnerable people, the elderly, you know. And so you kind of make them think sometime. But why do you think our country became such a political issue, the coronavirus and the COVID-19 and washing your hands and wearing a mask? Why do you think it became so political?
I think because the last president of the country made it very political, which is but everything in this country has become political. Like, I think that everything has become so polarized. So I guess it's not surprising that something like this would also become polarized and political. But yeah, the last president certainly made this a political issue. And the fact that the likelihood of whether you're going to get a vaccine, you can predict based on political party, is a sad state of this country. But knowing that, we have to recognize that, you know, that's the reality, and better understanding how to talk to these people who have a different view, where, you know, maybe presenting it as the moral or right thing to do isn't going to get them to take the vaccine, but talking about, well, this is the best way for the economy to recover, is okay to talk about, and making sure that you're talking to the person in that way. But yeah, the last president definitely made this political. And I also wanted to say, you know, it didn't have to be this bad. I'm South Korean, and I unfortunately had to go to South Korea because I had an immediate family member who died from other reasons. But I saw what it was like in a country that handled the virus in a way that was public health based and wasn't based on politics. And, you know, they didn't have to have the kind of lockdowns that we did, and they didn't have anywhere near the kind of deaths and destruction that we have. And people don't seem to understand there is no economy if the pandemic is not controlled. And you can see that in countries that are having, you know, issues right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, if more people get vaccinated, in my humble opinion, it's less chances for the virus to mutate. Right.
Yeah,
that's what it's all about. Yeah. Right. And so here's what I wanted to ask. So you learned a lot from giving all the shots. You volunteered, you're a physician, you worked on hospice, you saw palliative care up front, you saw what happens when people are dying. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, some of the human interactions you had as you gave that shot in the arms.
Okay. So I just wanted to take a step back and just share with your listeners that, as you mentioned before, I don't practice clinical medicine anymore, but when the virus started to really impact New York City last year in the winter, I actually volunteered to work in the hospitals. And so my initial volunteering experience was working at a Queens hospital on the weekends, because I had a Monday through Friday job at the office. So I went to my regular job Monday through Friday, and on the weekends, on either a Saturday or Sunday, I went in and took care of patients dying of COVID. And so what they needed was a palliative care doctor. And so my job was to ensure that patients who were dying, mostly from COVID, were well taken care of, and that the families could communicate. So basically what I did was set up a lot of FaceTime calls for families to say goodbye, because if you remember, at the beginning especially, people were not allowed to have family visitors. And so a lot of times people couldn't say goodbye to their loved ones, even on a video call. And so what I did was kind of ensure that the patients were comfortable, and also make sure that they got to interact with their families. And so I watched a lot of family members say goodbye to their loved ones. One of my most difficult experiences at the beginning was taking care of somebody who was from my country, and I had the phone for them to say goodbye, and I could understand a little Korean, and hearing, you know, this was a younger person, the parents telling their son that they loved him and that he was going to be okay, was something that I'll never forget. That's what I did on Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
So I felt like I had some PTSD, like a lot of doctors who were involved in taking care of a lot of COVID patients in the spring. And so when people started needing volunteers for vaccinations, I volunteered right away, because I don't think I'm drawn to volunteering anyways, but I don't think I realized how, for myself, how healing it would be, because my previous experience volunteering was so traumatic, taking care of people who are dying. And then when I was vaccinating people, oh my God, it was such an uplifting experience. I took, you know, I vaccinated people who said, you know, I'm going to be able to see my daughter, my grandson's bar mitzvah in person and give him a hug, or, you know, things like that. Or, you know, like, so many people cried when I gave them the vaccine, and it was tears of happiness, because they said that for the first time, just like I said earlier, they felt hope that they hadn't had before. And, you know, the last time I volunteered to vaccinate, we all stopped and cheered, because we had somebody who was 100 years old come in for a vaccination.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know what else we
can,
I know we see it in our nursing home too. And, you know, I don't know what else we can say or do to tell people, we have this pandemic to fight, and yes, we do have to reset the economy, Because that's the two most important things right now in our world. I mean, I'm looking at what's going on in India as well, and my heart's breaking.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we only have like a minute left. And, I mean, if you is there anything else you want to say to our listeners if someone wants to, maybe there's a website where you work and they want to get more involved in what you kind of work you're doing or anything like that? We'd love to stay in contact with you.
So there's actually, if you just Google vaccine hesitancy lunch, there's some actually great talking points that is directed, it's not just for physicians, for anybody who may want to talk to their loved ones, because I think for everybody who may interact with somebody who's a little hesitant, it would be of benefit to society if we all could talk to somebody in a non-judgmental way so that we can convince somebody who's maybe on the fence to join those of us who've decided to get vaccinated. So if you Google lunch, they did a really great focus group and provide a lot of great talking points on how to talk to patients who are reluctant to get the vaccine.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Sunny. How do you say your first name? Is it Sunny?
It's Sunny Moon.
Sunny Moon. Okay. So, and that's just like yourself, because you know what? You are so uplifting and your Facebook posts are so informative. And for people like myself who enjoy learning something new every day and gaining new knowledge, I learn a lot from you. I also learn a lot from our friend. And I love Sanjay too, and our friend Sanjay, but he gets in trouble sometime with the Facebook jail business. And you know, I was in Facebook jail for 24 hours too because I called somebody a parrot. But doctor,
I've been there multiple times.
Yeah, I know. Doctor, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. I'd love for you to call back in, and I feel like you're sitting right next to us in the studio, and we will tell our listeners to Google vaccine hesitancy. And thank you for all that you're doing for us human beings here in America as well.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. Have a wonderful day, everybody.
You too.
Bye-bye. Thank you, doctor.
So that was great. And so when she talked about the vaccine hesitancy, what I thought about was I belong to a group called Bakaska from you, and you know about Bakaska.
Yes.
And we are here in Brevard. And I have a lot of friends from the Caribbean who are not taking the vaccine because they also need an education. And like she said, there's a time and place for everything. And so I was invited to be part of a group that we're dealing with trying to put on a festival and do a lot of events to showcase Caribbean Heritage Month. And so I'm like, you know what? I should have them on the show to talk a little bit about what we are doing. And yes, they're going to be encouraging masks and everything. So I invited our friend Kim Miraj, who is the vice president of Bakaska, to come into the studio for a few minutes and chat with us. So welcome, Kay.
Hello, ladies. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Kay also ran for office for the
City of Palm Bay.
And you gained a lot of experience.
Absolutely.
And you're also a real estate agent. So you're giving back to the community in so many ways.
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is home. This is home. So I always say take care of home. And so I'm always here to help in any way I can in my community, whether it's, you know, finding someone at home or it's working with our Caribbean community to make sure that people get their vaccine.
It's rewarding.
It is, right? It is.
So the last time I spoke with you, you were not going to be involved too much in Bakaska, but then lo and behold, in my group chat, it says Kay Miraj. I'm like, yeah, Casey. I loved it. So tell our listeners really quick I'm planning it. I already pledged $100 to help with
Thank
expenses.
You.
I bought two costumes for my sister and I. And I want to know a little bit more about what we're doing.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's going to be a wonderful month. So I'm not sure if your listeners know that June is celebrated as Caribbean American Heritage Month. And of course, this has, just to get a little bit of background, this has been since 2006 when it was, I guess it was put out there by Congressman Barbara Lee to kind of acknowledge the contribution of Caribbean citizens here who have really been just focused on helping their community and just growing, you know, overall. And so since 2006, every year they have been celebrating Caribbean American Heritage Month. And of course, Bakaska, being a Caribbean organization, want to make sure that we are doing that here in Brevard County.
And we have a lot to share.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, people ask me, how can you marry? You're married to somebody from the Middle East and you're from the Caribbean. Yeah, we like to dance, we like to sing, we like to eat, we like to party, and we just love life.
And family.
And we want to bring that and share to everyone.
And right? Family doesn't just encompass your blood when it comes to all of our communities at this mic today. It encompasses the people that become your family.
And people don't realize that the Caribbean is one of the most diverse place on earth.
Right.
We have, and you know, it's the Spanish speaking, the French speaking, the Portuguese, you know, the
and
English
the
speaking.
And we're a rainbow of beautiful color.
Right. Yes. And so we want to celebrate all of that.
So when is it starting? From what day of the month and when is it ending?
So, of course, we don't do anything small here when it comes to the Caribbean. Right. So we're planning an entire month of festivities and activities. And we're kicking it off right in the city of Palm Bay on Thursday, June 3rd. And that's at 6 p.m. to 7, where we're going to basically take over the city hall, on the lawns of City Hall. Then that's where your audience can get a taste of the food, a taste a little
flavor.
Bit of the culture, the music, and just to see what's going to happen for the next month. So when they come, I would encourage everybody to come out. We're going to be on City Hall. You're going to see the flags, and you're going to know something special is going on there. And then, of course, we're going to do on Friday. We're not doing this first Friday. We're doing Caribbean Friday, and that's on June 4th. Now, that starts from 5 to about 10 p.m., and that's where the excitement begins, because then we're going to have some salsa, some merengue, some reggaeton, some
Calypso
music, soca music, the Panatics, Palm Bay Panatics are going to be playing. We have Bianca Ortiz just bringing that Spanish flair, Eruption Band bringing that reggae and soca, and we have Rast Professor, who's going to give us some old school, you know, kind of good reggae vibe.
So red wine kind of thing.
Really good vibe. And what's going to happen is that we're going to have vendors, food from all over the Caribbean. So it's not too late to become a member, a vendor. So if you want to have a vendor spot, whether it's food or non-food, definitely go to bacascafl.com. You can get some information there, or you can call 321-557-2968. And that's where you can get some information about becoming a sponsor or a vendor.
So now what about the parade that we're all going to be wearing our costumes, which I'm going to try to lose some weight to fit into my costume. What day is the parade?
That's going to be on June 26th. So that's we're going to culminate.
What day is that?
And that's Saturday, June 26th. We start right around noon. And noon to right about 2 a.m., right? Ooh. We're going to take the party in, because guess what happened? After that, at the park, going to be at Fred Poppy Park. And just so you know, the Caribbean Friday is actually going to be at Veterans Park in
Palm
Bay.
But we can't be out in the heat that long. So a parade is not that long.
No.
Right?
So the parade. So it's going to be a parade and festival.
Yes.
So there's going to be food, music.
So a certain time you'll be wearing your costume.
Well, you can come in a costume and parade all around.
Okay. You can parade all the time.
But when we actually.
Sounds like Carnaval. Hey.
So it's a Caribbean style parade. So in the Fred Poppy Park. So it's not just walking around.
Right.
It's dancing. There'll be music and you're dancing up and down in that park. And it's going to be a whole Caribbean flair.
Right.
So it's, again, it's the food, the music, the whole flavor of the Caribbean.
And we're encouraging people to wear their masks.
Absolutely.
And there'll be stations set up to wash your hands and things like that.
We have all of that. Stations set up. There are going to be mask giving, you know, so make sure that people are safe. And, you know, bring the kids out as well. It's a family event.
So information. So if somebody wants to know more about this month-long festivities for Caribbean and American and anyone who wants to dance and eat and have a good time and learn about different cultures, where do they go?
They, of course, go to the Bacasca website, and that's BCASAFL.com.
And is Bacasca looking for more volunteers and more members to join? And can they go on that same website, join Bacasca, be part of the community, volunteer, do whatever they can?
Oh, absolutely. We encourage people to do that. Come on out. Come to the website. Learn some more. And, of course, we didn't mention we're going to have film as well. So we have Caribbean film showcasing as well. So go to the website, bacascafl.com, or you can call 321-557-2968 for more information.
I'm going to give you 30 extra seconds. What is your 30-second spiel for someone to join Bacasca? I'm tired of Caribbean people saying, I didn't know nothing about Bacasca.
Well, Bacasca is an organization that is there for all Caribbean people. Whether you just want a place to find a friend, somebody to talk to, or just being able to kind of blend in something that you're used to, come on out. We are there. We're there providing information for people. A lot of people who have gotten their vaccines got it because of what Bacasca has been doing. We're partnering with different groups to give that information. So absolutely, come on out. We're partnering with the city.
And preserve your culture and your heritage. Oh. Pass it on to the next generation.
Especially our young
people. Most important.
Right? Especially
our young
people.
Oh my gosh,
I
wish I could talk to Kay forever, but we have to take a quick station break, get our commercials in, and it will go right to our second guest, Mr. Alex Barrio.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on sunny, very sunny Cocoa, Florida on WWBC. Our dial is WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7. 99.9 and 100.7. We're also heard online, Paul, everywhere on
1510wwbc.com.
Yeah, I have people that tune in like all over the world for this show. But before we go to Alex Barrio, who will be calling in a little bit, Kay, I'm sure there's a few other things you want to mention about the month-long festivities for Bacasca. And tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, what exactly does Bacasca stand for?
Sure. So I'll start off with that. Bacasca is Brevard Caribbean American Sports and Cultural Association. We wanted to put everything in there to make sure you know exactly what we do. It's about celebrating Caribbean culture and the heritage. And of course, we love sports. We love our cricket. So we actually play. There's cricket matches there every Sunday. They come out, they'll play cricket. So you can go to our website to learn when those days are. But of course, we have so much things planned. So we have Carib Fest on the river. Every June, we put on a Caribbean festival, a films festival. So right now, we're going to have on the 11th of June from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Captain's House. They're going to be an exhibition, Jamaican on Ice exhibition. This is the first Jamaican to go to Antarctica, and she's going to do her exhibition there. We're going to have poetry, drumming, music, and film, Caribbean film from all across the Caribbean. And we also have on Wednesday, June 18th, we're going to have the Consul General from Barbados come in to talk, as well as we're going to have We have Soca Sunday, Soca Saturdays. We have Reggae
Friday. It's a month of fun.
It's a month.
And what a way to welcome back humanity after COVID-19, right?
Yes.
Great. And it's safe and it's fun. It's for families. And it's called the Brevard
Caribbean American Sports and Cultural Association.
Why does it have to be so long? It just mixes people up.
Bacasca.
Yeah.
And okay. Again, it's an amazing partnership for the city of Palm Bay, continually pushing forward towards diversity and inclusion.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And, well, Caribbean people is all about that. We just love that.
Yes.
So our second guest is on the phone, and it's Alex Barrio. And Alex, you know what? You and I have spoken several times about you calling in on the show, and you are with the Director of for Advocacy for the Gun Violence Prevention Policy Center for American Progress. So welcome. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, we were just talking about you before we went on air, and not only are you the Director of for Advocacy, but you've also done a lot of stuff at Alianza for Progress. You're engaging and mobilizing Latino voters across the state of Florida, which my co-host Samantha is Puerto Rican. She is a Latino, and she's so excited you're on the show today. And you have a long history of political activism like myself. So tell our listeners a little bit about what else you're doing, and what can we do about the state of gun violence in the United States today?
Great. So thank you. I have a long history of advocacy in Florida. I was the district director for Congressman Soto, as well as political director of Alianza for Progress. But right now, I'm happy to be working with the Center for American Progress, which is a think tank based in D.C. And as the advocacy director for gun violence prevention policy, I work as the facilitator of a national gun violence prevention coalition. And ultimately, we have over 200 organizations in almost every state and lots of cities and in D.C., working to fight gun violence across many different areas. We have legislation to try to expand background checks and close the Charleston loopholes in order to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous peoples. We're also working with local and state governments to direct funding for community-based violence solutions, putting money in communities that are being racked by gun violence to make sure there are mental health services, community services in our schools, resources, to really address the sources of gun violence, which include, there's economic problems, there are gangs, drug addiction, mental health issues, and really going down to the source in order to stop gun violence and really save lives. You know, it's going to take a holistic, comprehensive solution in order to bring gun violence in this country down, and so we're working at every aspect to try to help people.
Yeah, and you know what? This weekend, I worked on Mother's Day, so I didn't get to watch a lot of TV. But then I noticed that there was more mass shootings in the United States, and I noticed there was another one in Colorado. And I was speaking with somebody at the gym this morning. We're like, why Colorado? Why is it so easy? We hear about Aurora. We hear about this shooting. There's so many that always happens there. What is it about the state of Colorado that has so many mass shootings?
Well, Colorado is very, very polarized around this gun issue. The people who are pro-gun are extremely pro-gun. This were the home of Congresswoman Lauren Boebert, who is famous for just posting pictures of her campaign and having Zoom videos from Congress surrounded and flanked by guns just on shelves. It's a state where the NRA is very powerful, and it's very, very easy to get guns. And one of the things that has happened in Colorado is as they've passed gun legislation, like a ban on the sales of assault weapons, the NRA has sued to overturn those bans, which then has forced Colorado to have to make guns easier to access once again. And so compared to other states, Colorado is relatively easy to buy guns, and that access has created a problem where dangerous folks are frankly able to amass the weapons that they need in order to commit these sorts of atrocities. And so Colorado's now at a place where they're trying to figure out how can they improve mental health services, how can they improve extreme risk protection orders to potentially remove guns from dangerous people, and really protect people long-term. But
And there was domestic violence involved in that as well, because apparently the gentleman went to, I don't know if you'll call him a gentleman, but the human went to hurt his ex-girlfriend or something like that, I was reading.
Exactly. And there's a real problem in this country where there's something called the boyfriend loophole, where if you're married and you commit domestic violence, you can get your guns taken away from you by a court. If you're not married, then, and you're just a boyfriend, then the guns don't, then the courts don't have the right to take away your weapons. And that's another thing that we need to close around this country to make sure that victims of domestic violence who don't go so far as to get married are protected. Like, you should have to marry your abuser in order to be safe from them. Like,
absolutely.
That is very
absolutely, Alex. Hi, my name is Samantha. It's a pleasure to be on with you today. I am a very big fan of Alianza for Progress. I was actually on Julio's show about 2 weeks ago.
Great.
So I have a quick question for you. What sort of solutions exist to prevent gun violence?
There's a number of things we can do. And it's really important to understand the different aspects of gun violence to understand the different solutions. You know, the primary source of gun violence, number one, is suicide. A lot of people don't think of suicide as gun violence, but suicide is nationally about two-thirds of gun deaths are people taking their own life. So first, making sure that family members have the rights through what are known as extreme risk protection orders or red flag laws to petition a court to take away guns from somebody who is threatening to take away their own life. That's very, very important. And there are stats that show, you know, for every 15 or 20 extreme risk protection orders, you save one life from suicide. With that, making sure that everyone has access to comprehensive mental health services, especially in schools. We should be investing in mental health counselors at every single school in every single school district to protect young people from going down the path of taking their own life. There are many reasons that young people take their lives, but it's a huge, huge problem around the country.
You hit
another reason.
You hit on a great point there, because a lot of us, when people were talking about defunding the police, which is something they should not have used that word, we talked about reallocation of funds for mental health and for the young people, and to help them so that they don't end up wanting to commit suicide in such a way as all. So keep going. I just wanted to say that that was something that was on my mind.
No, absolutely. You know, I mean, the whole defund the police slogan, it's, you know, it's arguably, I mean, it's not a great slogan, but that's a whole separate argument. But ultimately, you know, police are reactive, right? They show up after the thing. Even this weekend, we had a shooting in Times Square, and the shooter got away. Times Square is the most heavily policed place in the entire United States. It has the most police officers per square foot in the entire country, right there. They are everywhere in Times Square, and yet the police were unable to catch this person who ran away, who shot a four-year-old.
Yes.
That is, so far last I checked, was surviving, but then they got away. And so we have to make sure we're addressing the causes and not just funding the reactions to this. Beyond that, you know, beyond suicide, right, which is another issue, and a lot of people also dealing with substance abuse, you know, making sure there are resources to address people's mental health crises. The second largest cause of gun violence happens in community-based violence, right? These are gang shootings, shootings in major cities. In Florida, you have huge problems in Jacksonville and in Miami. And a lot of these are communities that are already very under-resourced. They don't have a lot of jobs. The schools are not getting the money they need. And so we need to make sure we are putting money into those communities to address and ensure that every student and every young person in those communities has access to an education so they can get a job, get out of those communities, or stay in those communities and reinvest them, start their own business, build their dream home, really make the change that is necessary in those communities. And so working on community-based violence solutions, there are lots of nonprofit organizations that do that sort of work in Chicago, you know, gang intervention work, intervention in the schools, but really working with young people early to break the cycle.
Well, give them hope, and you give them hope too when you teach them about financial literacy, about investing, about a trade or going to college or investing in their own communities, because that's where they want to live and raise their families and have a job and healthcare and institutions where they can actually live, not just survive.
Absolutely.
You know,
and then after community-based violence, you have mass shootings, which are a huge problem, you know, because they are so random, right? They're so scary because, you know, you could be at a movie theater, at a church. Last week it was a casino, and somebody can walk in and just lay waste to people. And it's very, very frustrating, very scary. You know, they happen in our schools, of course. There was a shooting in Idaho last week where two students and a teacher were shot by a student. So making sure, number one, that young people do not have access to guns. And one of those ways that we do that is with background checks, mandatory background checks for all gun sales. Right now, you can go to a gun show, and there are videos online where you can see this 13-year-old going to gun shows and buying assault weapons, having access to assault weapons. We have to make sure that people are being checked before they buy guns. They're being checked for mental health. And we need to work with our law enforcement and mental health services to connect that data and to see if this is somebody who has been, who has a violent background, who's been in crisis before, that they don't have access to a weapon, but that instead we can divert them. And if someone is trying to buy a gun who has, who cannot pass a background check, that person should be diverted to mental health care services where they can really address the issue. Like, are you really trying to get a gun because you want to go hunting, or are you buying a gun because you're upset at this person and you're dealing with an issue that must be resolved?
I know, that's and you're absolutely correct. And I know that there are people who are just tuning in. Someone just texted me. They want to know who we're speaking with. We're speaking with our friend Alex Barrio, and he's the Director of Advocacy for Gun Violence Prevention at American Progress.
And Alex, I have a two-part question for you. I myself am an advocate. I've gone to Tallahassee several times to advocate against Big Pharma. One, the first part is, why is the NRA so powerful? And the second part would be, how can regular people get involved in preventing gun violence in their community?
There's a lot of different ways to get involved. One, there are lots of local and national community groups, and it really depends on how you want to address gun violence, right? What is your concern? Is your concern mass shootings? Is your concern suicide prevention? You know, and then where do you fit in there? Groups like Everytown exist around the country, so they have Moms Demand chapters in every state. I'd recommend reaching out to Moms Demand. I know there's a huge Moms Demand in Central Florida. There are also groups like, the Honor with Action Coalition, which is based in South Florida, and they do a lot of work and advocacy in Tallahassee. And I can, you know, you have my email, Sita. It's abarrio@americanprogress.org.
Yes.
abarrio@americanprogress.org. Anybody can email me for more information, and I can connect you with people in your community or in your state that are doing this work. You know, in Jacksonville, there's a lot of community-based violence prevention work. You know, they're working in black churches to connect with people in their community to break the cycle of violence. So there are a lot of different ways. If you're a doctor or medical professional, there are organizations specifically for doctors and medical professionals doing community intervention in hospitals, which is hospital-based intervention programs, to help people and working directly with victims of violence, you know. And then if you're somebody who has been a victim, there are organizations like Survivors Empowered that work with survivors and connect survivors around the country to help them become advocates in their state and in D.C. And every year, which this year is December 8th, there is a national prayer vigil for survivors of gun violence in Washington, D.C. And if you're interested in learning about that, I can definitely connect you with the organizers, which is the Newtown Action Alliance is one of the organizers, and they are in Sandy Hook, whereas we all know the mass shooting at the kindergarten in December of 2012. So there are literally hundreds and hundreds of different ways to get involved.
Right. So I see our time, we just have a few more minutes. Talking about states, what is the state of Florida doing to help prevent gun violence?
So the state of Florida and Tallahassee is not doing anything, really, that I am seeing in Tallahassee. A few years ago, after Parkland, they did pass the red flag law, which is the extreme risk protection order, but it is very limited, and it hasn't been used that often to take guns away from dangerous people. You know, Florida doesn't have universal background checks, they don't have an assault weapons ban, and they restrict local governments from doing that, from passing those sorts of legislations. So Florida is one of the most dangerous places for gun violence right now in the country, and there really isn't a lot. One thing I will say is there are programs in Palm Beach for substance abuse, so, and around the state, really. So at least addressing that mental health aspect of substance abuse is out there. But when it comes to even keeping our schools safe, you know, they're putting school resources officers at all the different schools, but they're not putting mental health counselors. And so, again, they're acting after the fact. They are only doing things to address gun violence after people are already dead. They're not doing anything preventative. And it's a real, real, real frustration. But that is the leadership of the legislature.
Well, you know, voting has a, when you vote, it has a consequence. And I hope people who are tuned in will look at their voter's registration card, make sure they have their ID and everything ready to vote when it's time, because leadership matters.
And it's sad that our children have gone from a fire drill to an active shooter drill.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. So one more question. How much time do we have, Paul? Oh, great. We have a few more minutes. So here. So you just answered the question about what's Florida doing. So what is the Biden administration doing to curb gun violence?
So the Biden administration is doing a lot, actually, through executive actions. One thing they're definitely working on, actually, right now is curbing ghost guns, which are guns that don't have serial numbers, guns that are, you know, people can order parts online or 3D print them. And then are untraceable, right? So these guns that just appear in the streets and nobody can find the source of them. You know, the federal government is very restricted in what it can do without laws passed by Congress. So what they are doing right now is trying to handle the regulatory part to make sure that we are not allowing basically people to build guns randomly in their own houses. You know, we want to make sure that the gun market that exists, because we do have the Second Amendment and we do have rights to bear arms, want to make sure that that is regulated in such a way as we don't have these illegal guns floating. So really tackling the problem of illegal guns, tackling crime guns, making sure that we are taking guns off of the street that don't need to be there from criminals is one thing. Another thing is he has put up David Chipman to be the director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which is our primary gun regulator. Again, the ATF has the ability to really go after illegal guns to make sure that we're not trafficking guns into places like Mexico illegally, where they're being used for mass murder, you know, through the cartels or through drugs, and really keeping guns out of dangerous hands. You know, the ATF is working to strengthen the background check system, as well as they are doing a lot of research through the Centers for Disease Control and the CDC and the National Institutes of Health on the root causes of gun violence. There's also a lot of funding going directly to hospitals and community organizations through the American Rescue Plan, which is the plan that was passed a few months ago. All that funding is going towards hospitals and community organizations to address and support the victims of gun violence and reduce gun violence by working with people one-on-one, you know, asking them, really working with them to turn in their weapons and to get the mental help and support that they need in order to reduce gun violence.
It's, you know, really nice. To have someone like Alex Barrio, yourself, break it down for us here on Viewpoint with Cedar and Friends and tell us what the Biden administration is doing to help curb gun violence. But here's another thing. Somebody, I think Samantha, somebody has just texted us. Why do you think the NRA is so powerful? Because, I mean, I just went to the hospital 4 months ago when my little grandson was born. And, as I walked down the hall, of course, my advocate mind takes over. And I'm like, these are such beautiful babies that are born into this earthly journey, right? What happens to a child when it grows up that it wants to pick up an assault rifle and kill other human beings? Because we're all born so innocent. Like, what happens, Alex, with human beings? What is this fixation with assault rifles and guns?
There's two questions there. I mean, I think everybody, first to answer your second question about like why people get involved, you know, in guns is, you know, it's very, very different all around. Some people grow up in an environment in a community of violence, right? They're exposed to violence at a young age and they don't get the mental health and trauma support that they need, you know, because they see their neighbor getting shot or their cousin or something. And that's the problem of community-based violence, right?
Yeah.
It's a cycle that continues to repeat itself because the communities don't get the investments they need to break that cycle. You know, for other people, it's mental health issues, it's substance abuse. I mean, you know, these mass shooters, for the most part, have histories of mental health and violence and not taking the medication or getting the therapy that they need to really address those issues. In terms of the NRA's power, the NRA has millions of people on their list. We don't know the exact number, but it's estimated to be about 5 million people. Many, many, many of those people are highly tuned to gun regulations, and they have been conditioned by the NRA to oppose all gun regulations. So anytime a state or federal or local government moves to do anything to address gun violence in a meaningful way, they activate their supporters to go to those public meetings, to go to those town halls, to contact their members of Congress and say, don't do this, you better not do this, or you will lose re-election. If you do this, you'll lose my vote. And so you have this onslaught of people who represent a small portion of a community, but because they are so loud and so organized, have this outsized influence, and it frightens legislators. I mean, it frightened the entire Republican Party.
It frightens me. Honestly, it frightens me when I hear this, too, because you wonder, do people really care about human lives on this earthly journey called life or not?
It goes back to our financial inequality in the United States. Those with power find loopholes, and those poorer, like he's saying, inner city urban communities, we suffer the waste. We become the wasteland.
It's a sad it's a sad situation of money talks.
Yes.
And mobilization talks. So, Alex, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, get some more information about the good work you're doing at the Gun Violence Prevention Policy Center for American Progress. I like that. It's a nice word, nice title. How should they get a hold of you?
Yeah, they could email me. It's abarrio, A-B-A-R-R-I-O, at AmericanProgress.org, AmericanProgress.org. And anytime, email me if you want to learn more, get involved. You know, we have a huge research arm with lots of research and data if anybody's interested in learning about that as well. And if you want to connect with any local organizations, please feel free to reach out.
Well, Samantha's head is spinning because she would like to have you come and speak one day when we do an event in town.
And I'd like to invite him to join us in the parade to spread awareness.
Absolutely. Let me know, you know, send me some dates. And I can definitely work it out. My mom lives in Jacksonville, so I am in Florida fairly regularly, though I'm currently in D.C. right now working. But, you know, let me know some dates, and I can definitely make it happen.
Well, Alex Barrio, you're a good human, and thank you for caring about humanity and doing what you do to bring awareness and educate people about the gun violence and what we can do as citizens to find solutions. We appreciate you taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you, Alex. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC. You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.